Good morning, Mark. How are you today?
Morning, Ryan. We're well. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Welcome to the TechNext podcast, The Business of Your Business. We're jumping into season two, and this is episode one. So thank you for taking the time to speak to me about FoxQuilt, your journey, insurance, and you know, some of the other awesome things you guys are working on, some of the initiatives. FoxQuilt is growing extensively. Awesome to see. And also want to, you know, touch base with talking about your VC funding that you went through. I know that took a long time. Before we get to that, you know, tell the listeners about FoxQuilt. What is FoxQuilt?
Yeah, so more importantly, as a proud member of the TechConnects Association, we're really pleased to be invited to speak to your broader audience. So thanks for having us again.
Awesome. Thanks, Mark.
Our team, you know, three of us are head of technology, Malin and my co-founder partner, Krim, and myself. We were part of the leadership group of, you know, another proud high growth tech company, fintech company based and grown out of Toronto. And that company, you know, had a successful IPO in 2017. And Malin and Krim and I were, you know, representing the insurance vertical within that fintech organization. And one of the problems that we saw at the time in basically, you know, that growth story, majority of it took place in the US, but between the years 2011 and 17, as being insurance nerds, we saw kind of witness first generation of insurtech distribution in the US, UK, Europe, et cetera. And so we followed closely on, and most of it was around innovating digitization of insurance online, mostly done through, you know, technology founders that had strong exits in other realms that were learning insurance on the go. So they're creating a better user experience online, but they're not much innovation done in regards to champion new products or overall empowering, you know, small business owner or whoever target market they were looking to afford innovation around. And we were servicing our, you know, our tech platform at the time was servicing essentially a community of like and kind small businesses. 200,000 of them. They're mom and pop appraisal shops across North America. And, you know, the last piece of their onboarding was showcasing their life policy, insurance policy, and the requirements would be GLE, you know, et cetera. Most often they never ever had it in place. So they'd have to walk back to a legacy broker. And if they came back at all, it would be months later. So it was a real problem in our onboarding process. So not being naive, we called out to, you know, the different alpha broker houses and some of the larger carriers in the market to ask them why, you know, can you not integrate insurance as a solution to our platform and more importantly, empower our, you know, like and kind network of small businesses with, you know, affinity offering that would have, you know, some buying power. We didn't get a response back from the marketplace and we didn't think we would. But that was our light bulb moment, said, okay, well, you know, real underserved marketplace, and why can't we use technology to join like and kind small businesses together so they can be more empowered and have better buying power at every pillar of the life cycle of their policy, meaning certainly up front when they're purchasing pillar one, but pillar two, a richer claims experience, potentially, eliminate that deductible. It's really there to protect the interests of the insurance company. And most importantly, pillar three, reward and entice and positive behavior. You haven't had a claim in 3 years. Certainly you shouldn't be just getting, you know, inflationary increases over time. So that was the bottom line premise, but we sat down as a, you know, trio in 2016 and really we're focused on creating the blueprint around the architecture. So we want to be a technology company first and foremost, and we want to really design back-end data science and architecture that would fulfill the end-to-end needs of our small business customer. And what I mean by that is that you're starting with, you know, you're self-funding your initiative and you haven't raised your first round of capital yet. So it's all around alphas and betas as essentially first as a digital broker and learning those original, you know, contracts with some employer partners. And you're really using off-the-shelf components to really learn and experiment what's resonating with the marketplace as you build your platform over time. But we, where we, you know, this again in one of your next questions probably is how we differentiate ourselves in this global marketplace as a leading global champion of insurance technology, insurtech.
Yeah, it's interesting because I have, as you know, I have an insurance background, and I know we've talked extensively before about this. And I think it's very cool because obviously insurance is an old business that needs to be updated and needs to be current with the times. So everything you're saying is, hitting everything like square on the head. And the fact that you guys focus on the smaller businesses, and one of the things I give you guys kudos for is how you guys feature some of your smaller businesses. And you got to walk a wide array of amazing little businesses that I've never heard of, because it's from all over Canada, but like you have breweries, the flower shops, dental offices, you name it. You guys have hit so many different target areas, and I guess with a small niche team that you're able to, focus and provide a dedicated service and package based on their needs versus, large box mentality. This is what you get, and this is what underwriting is going to do. So I guess you're setting yourself up for, how do you guys set yourself apart from other insurance companies?
Well, that's a really great segue. And this is what makes basically our business model and our architecture so innovative, and where we differentiate ourselves from the other players in, across the globe, essentially. So, we looked at that first generation, that first wave of insurtech distribution companies and globally, and most of them in that first wave in, say 2010 to 2017, were focused on top line plays, just really customer acquisition through different marketing plays and richer user experience. And then we looked at where venture capital learning that, they really haven't gotten too deep into the value chain, but they're really sponsoring and chasing shiny objects, very narrow type of market niches and programs, on demand, usage based, all this, glossy stuff. And we left our Canadian borders very early, 2016-17, to start courting these, these champions that would basically transcend us into essentially a modern carrier, the big reinsurance companies and other capacity providers. And we said, okay, this is our vision is, and our mission is to essentially differentiate ourselves around profitability. Our end goal is to target and retain profitable risks, but it's really to put the small business owner, our customer, in the driver's seat. So they're empowered, and they're not being dictated terms and product one size fits all by their treaty with their existing incumbent carriers. And what that means is that we wanted to build a full service provider shop that would empower and enable those customers, small businesses, across our platform, those that we're targeting. But the machine in the back end, our back end architecture, creates very, very succinct pathways to where they belong on a tailor-made offering on our own Fox Quill paper. So years later, super happy to announce to, and we'll be doing lots of PR, beating our drums here very soon, the largest reinsurance company in the world is essentially afforded us, all the autonomy and the licensing and the capacity to build these tailor-made offerings for our small business customers, and essentially given us authority to be a modern carrier. And what they're looking at doing is creating, obviously, revenue channels that will create innovation and champion the needs of these small business owners that are tied to these monolithic architecture carriers that really don't service their best interests. We're talking about retail e-commerce. Now we're building architecture that basically says, okay, your customer journey should be streamlined and simple. If you're a small business owner with 5 employees, a stonemason or a small technology consulting company in Barrie, Ontario or Kitchener-Waterloo, you're busy all day. You should be able to access simplicity, that front end experience at 10 p.m. at night to find that product that you're looking for very quickly, and let the machine move you through a very, very narrow pathway upstream to a tailor-made offering specific for the requirements of your business. Not this one-size-fits-all ubiquitous packaged product that you're probably paying a premium on that you don't understand why, because it has all these extra frills in place you're a small business owner and you got four employees, if most of your advertising is coming from word of mouth, certainly you don't need to pay $200 of advertising liability with that product. So now what we afford our, you know, small business owners in this, you know, next iteration of, you know, when we're launching our products this fall with Munich Re and some other capacity providers, essentially it provides basically that pathway to our own paper that's a tailor-made offer specific to the, whether a beautician or whether they are a chiropractor or whether, you know, like you said, a small brewery. It's going to have a tailor-made product offering for them that they can basically get bound and issued online at 10 p.m. at night. Where it's going is now we're built on, I try to articulate it, most of the incumbent carriers that come top of mind in our Canadian domestic marketplace. And, you know, I empathize with them because they have a larger problem. They have these large, massive technology architecture that you're trying to unwind. And if you looked at their architecture, it would take up all four walls of our office here because they've got plugins and licensed software vendors in there. And it's really built on monolithic architecture that collapses in on itself, even if it's a bug. And it's, you know, you can see that the how naked exposed they've been in the last 200 days during this pandemic. Small policy and min changes, if you want to suspend your small fleet of vehicles under driveway because you're not using them, if you want to just alter and amend adding a new customer, it's all done paper-based through a legacy network of brokers and agents. That doesn't work anymore because it's taking weeks to make those amendments and changes. Now, FoxQuilt and other FoxQuilt in the world are building basically the Tesla for the insurance value chain. It's all built on microservices architecture, just like e-commerce retailers at Walmart and Amazon, right? So now all those different types are independent from one another, so they don't interchange and collapse in one another. So a perfect example of what that means is that for the small business owner or the mid-market business owner out there listening, when you are winning, it's all about helping your companies grow. So yes, it's about mitigating your risk and protecting your risk with the right appropriate coverage. It's tailor-made specific for your company, but also we're here to help you grow your company. So if you're a small videographer and you got 10 employees and you've just won basically a customer, municipality, Niagara Peninsula, but now it's status quo. That municipality is automatically asking to be named to your certificate, your insurance certificate, and they have requirements. You must have $5 million of liability, E&O protection limits in place. But if you only have two, you need to make those change amendments immediately and have a new board or a new policy issued immediately to win that customer. You can't wait 3 weeks for your carrier to respond to those different changes, or 2 weeks, or even 3 days to win that customer. So our architecture affords that. Our underwriting authority with Munich Re affords all those capabilities. So what that means is that that business owner, small, big, or large, is now in control of their own affairs when it comes to their insurance needs.
So I guess like one of the things I'm thinking about here, Mark, is I'm going to go off our the beaten path here with FoxQuilt and other tech focus insurance companies, because obviously, you know, you're probably not the only one, but what is this going to do to the big guys? Like, are you putting a small bomb and detonating them, and they are going to, you're not adjusting to them, they're going to have to adjust to you. So yeah. What is going to happen to the big, you know, Desjardins, big brokerages in London, around the world? Like, how are they going to compete with somebody like you versus you competing against them? Because you guys are on the street, you know, pounding down and looking to a market that has always been overlooked.
Yeah,
the everyday people. So, like, I guess my question is, where's the evolution going? What, like, where's FoxQuilt going to be in 5 years? What is insurance going to look like in 5 years? And how disruptive this truly is FoxQuilt and others like you?
So disruptive. And what happens is that this is a lesson learned in time. You can't plan for pandemics like COVID-19. And because they tried to, whether it was through essentially the dogma of some of their leadership teams managing and stewarding these big multinational firms, or whether it's basically they are always based in this kind of reactionary state. They're too big to be disrupted by smaller new Fox squirrels that are, you know, trying to basically now compete head-to-head around market share. This pandemic now basically exposes them and shows them, like, guys, you had 10 years to replace all your legacy systems. It was too much of an effort, or they didn't invest the capital or had the right leadership to do that fast enough. And now, essentially, the largest reinsurance company in the world are saying, okay, we're not going to buy these heritage homes, right? We'd have to tear them down and start from scratch and build new technology. What we're going to do is basically sponsor teams to build the modern carriers for tomorrow, because we're going to focus on champion our mutual customers and innovating and designing product bespoke for them. And that's essentially what's happening. So Foxquill is becoming a modern carrier. And if you look at the essence of our business model, the engine that's branded and has its own P&L and balance sheet, the SaaS engine, FoxDen, call whatever you want. What it does is it enables and empowers our product and distribution channels for the customer, their customer facing, like FoxQuilt. And then that SaaS business model now empowers and enables agnostic a myriad of different distribution channels. I'm talking straight to B2B. So first to come to mind, obviously big financial services companies like banks, they're building cloud suite product offerings with fintechs attached to it to service the interest of their small business portfolios. But outside of that box, we're talking about helping them imagine that they're going to be distributing insurance. So whether that's IKEA or a small technology company that's growing hand over foot, that has basically a network of landlords across the United States that have insurance product needs. And now FoxQuilt, because we've got this SaaS engine model that's a full service provider, and we can service from cradle to grave that policy, including claims and fulfillment and issuance and new product customization, on and on and on, where we are becoming the modern carrier that can now innovate across for new enterprise solutions. We can white label the platform. We can distribute across multiple channels, B2B, B2B2C, or B2C. That leaves basically these antiquated incumbent carriers sitting with their hands paralyzed on their, you know, sitting on their hands, because they're really large cruise ships and it takes a very, very long time for that cruise ship to basically steer the bow. And what that means, they have two choices. They either have to build in parallel internally a modern carrier, which is very capital intensive. And, you know, we were afforded with, you know, the last 3 or 4 years, really building on with our intellectual capital. We'll talk about VC, what that means, why that's, but we're very, very blessed and fortunate we've been able to, you know, attract really smart innovators to build the model and the technology. Or number two, they're going to have to look to basically partner with FoxQuilts or acquire them. It's as simple as that, because they're going to be outpaced very quickly in the next 3 or 4 years. And you don't have to look too far over your shoulders when you look at, you know, e-commerce retail. And my, you know, my wife's a big e-commerce retailer leadership team. So their architecture is no different than ours. It's built on microservices and it's customer enablement. And financial services has always lagged. Banking's been ahead of insurance. Insurance is always the last mover for so many different reasons. It would take more than this one podcast to sit down and take 3 pitches of beer or more. But what that means is that we have to innovate and champion more insurtechs, and especially in Canada. Where there's a richer, more mature venture capital ecosystem in Europe and Asia and US, they can go faster, and it's coming. And whether those Canadian domestic carriers like it or not, those innovative companies will be coming to our market, and we've seen a small handful, but this is still a very dynamic, rich market that I proudly share. We were, you know, the 10th largest GDP in the world, but we're much more than that. We're a very dynamic trading marketplace with lots of these multinationals. We do not have a border when it comes to insurance. North America is one marketplace. We need cross-border risk management. FoxQuilt, in our different capacity underwriting partners, Lloyd's and Munich Re, we actually are launching in the US in the first half of 2021. So, you know, my days are spent basically with that launch plan with the first five states. So we are expanding rapidly and then being endorsed and sponsored through some big rounds of upcoming capital that's inevitable. And when you're raising these larger rounds, that's when big carriers take notice, because that's about customer reach and marketing and advertising and innovating faster when it comes to a design and proprietary products. So
I guess, like, you know, like, and you brought up capital and raising capital. I know you guys raised capital and it was kind of finalized in July of this year, and congratulations on that and, you know, hard work that you and Karim did and the whole team. Can you talk us through a little bit of what you went through, kind of the nuances of working, you know, with VCs, and, you know, what made you choose or the VC that you're working with to secure the $3.5 million that you did? Like,
yeah, you know, it comes down to, like, everything that we do stems and ends with people. So, you know, we're not in a place that we are for going into our fifth year. You know, the people that we attract, we start basically recruiting that talent like a year in advance. So we got our leadership in place now, and we hired, I don't know, probably a dozen employees over the last 200 days, and most of our leadership team. When it comes to VC, it's exactly the same premise. We look for partners and people that we align with vision that can actually patiently answer our growth. Early stage financing, we don't need to give away the farm. We're, you know, we have, you know, Malin, myself, and Krim, we've been around long enough that we can build on our own intellectual capital. We can afford to self-fund it, but we still need their capital intensive projects when you're building technology. Malin's technology team is made up primarily of University of Waterloo data scientists and some developers, but mostly data scientists. He's got a team of nine. When you want to attract the best, it's an investment. So we raised an early stage, pre-seed round of capital, over $1 million in 2018, followed up by, you know, now transcending into a full service insurance provider with our own proprietary products, backed by Munich Re, essentially a modern carrier. That afforded us basically, you know, round out a seed round of, say, $3.5 million. Global standards, that's tiny. In the US, we'd raise probably, like, you know, quadruple that overnight down there. But we happen to be proud to be founding this company in Toronto, Canada. That means, so we had to basically court these different VC relationships in Canada, but we looked a little bit more even creatively outside of that. And that comes from experience from our last technology company and those relationships. We love our VC community. They've been super supportive. They're super intelligent. But it's small and it's still immature, if you will, if you look globally. This Canadian Venture Capital Association might be 100 members large. And in fintech, it's very narrow and tiny. Just a few different players and participants that are really relatively new, 4 or 5 years old. And most of them haven't really scratched the surface and doing the prudent homework within the insurance value chain. Well, we don't have time to enlighten and consult them. We've got to get on and moving the business forward. So it's sitting down with them all, and you know, now we've got very underwriting partners, and we look at Munich Re as, you know, they are the number one insurtech portfolio in the world. This is a deep dynamic partnership, not just a contract or a treaty across North America. So they are champions of all things as far as product design, the actual work, the technology, opening up the marketplace with licensing and all those different capabilities to basically quote and bind across North America. So we look to them to basically also champion our next round of capital. But when we look to close our $3.5 million seed round, we were fortunate that we closed it in earnest. We closed it before March, before the pandemic. Didn't think it was appropriate time to announce that until the broader community was in a better, more comfortable place. So what that means is that we closed it fairly quickly with the right partner. And these were relationships that we had in our last, number of years with our last fintech company. And what I say to different young founders or entrepreneurs is that you have to get out of your comfort zone, right? So, and you have to look beyond your borders. When we looked at Canada, and most of the, you know, when we're talking about underwriting, partnership and capacity or product innovation, most of the insurance companies in Canada weren't that curious or interested to see what we were doing. And most of the decision makers on those leadership teams are really, really focused on a 12-month P&L. And a lot of them are just paying a dividend back to a parent. So it's really about different satellites that are competing over, you know, 5% growth in market share. So we knew that because we've been exposed to the value chain for a long time. So we left Canada very early to seek out innovative partnerships that would allow for us to really build a very sophisticated insurance technology company. And we started those courtships, you know, in 2016 and said, hey, follow our story and our journey over the next couple of years. This is our team in Toronto, this is what we're doing. And it took about 2 years to fulfill that merit, to complete that marriage. We did the same thing with capital. Well, like I said, the other young founders of VC, you don't basically get fixated on venture capitalists endorsing, sponsoring your round of financing. Our first round was done, led by a venture capital firm here in Toronto and private equity firms. Our second round was actually done by the same, but ongoing, most of it was basically original investors. And then one investment group that was basically net new, but we really felt like the relationship would be much more meaningful from an advisor consulting standpoint, longer term. And you build that relationship over time, because when we're raising our next round of capital, we know that, again, most of the work over the last 24 months was actually sitting down and courting different relationships internationally, not within Canada. So we didn't confine ourselves. And it's important. You've got to diversify those different interests when you talk about financing and capital. It could be prolific Canadians that are champions of your vision, your business model, and your team in Vancouver to Halifax, coast to coast. So there are really, really strong advocates and angels that can sponsor that early stage financing. Venture capital doesn't have to be your starting point. It's just one of the different threads to entertain. And then, you know, you look at venture capital in Canada, I look at it not like, not, it's apples to oranges looking at international venture capital groups. Now, the States is just, it's just so large. So it's very competitive. The terms and the nuances are so much different because it's just such a large market, much more mature when it comes to venture capital. And they're much more bullish and ambitious. When they see great teams and great technology and great partnerships, they will go all in. Canada, we are, by culture and definition, conservative. So really, it's more like a banking ecosystem where they're looking at, you know, and they know that they have authority in the equation, in the sense that there's only a handful of them. So they get to see a pipeline of, you know, all these technology companies coast to coast, and they really get to pick them off when they're got these milestones and measurement that are beyond alpha beta that they're tested. So it's unfortunate in some ways where, you know, companies have to give away, you know, give away more when they're, you know, post, you know, $1 million of revenue plus. I say stay a little impatient. If you believe in your mission and your business model and your team, stay patient, stay idle, stay the course. Do not, you know, don't let them collude against the team and the business model. They have a mandate to make money and return on capital for their LPs, but wait for that next round. Relationships and relationships that take about 24 months to put in place.
So you mentioned, like, you're going in 2021, you're going to be working, you're moving south, you're going to be targeting five different states.
Yeah.
With VC funding, have you already started looking into round three? Because obviously that's going to be huge capital to get into the American market. And depending on which states you're targeting, if you're a broad range or you're targeting, like, maybe, you know, the New York, Ohio, Chicago, kind of the East Coast, Central. So have you guys already, like, are you guys already going into stage three now, looking to, you know, gather, you know, a larger fund from, you know, who you're working with or with somebody else?
So it never stops, right? So, and most of the legwork that I've done in the last 24 months has all been basically support the real Series A material round of financing. So, you know, we ask where we're going as a company. So we're building a modern carrier on modern architecture. And that SaaS engine has different development requirements just than feeding and enabling our distribution companies. And we could have distribution product companies across multiple industries and verticals if you look at it. SaaS engine now can be white labeled by different enterprises. And I'm talking about the good work that Lens team will be releasing and launching, you know, in our when we launch to the US market, you know, later in the first half of next year. But what that means is that they're capital intensive projects. And you can't just raise $3 million and expect to acquire customers, market, and then design next iterative your SaaS engine and next iterations in your distribution company. So that means we have to basically hit our milestones and our metrics to support our story. And we take those different potential VC partners along the journey with us. Most of the relationships are a bit international, very few Canadian. They know we're here. We exist in Toronto. If you want to come and see us, we're right here on One Yonge Street. You're welcome anytime for a coffee. So I don't need to court those different carriers and VCs here in Canada. If they missed us, well, they've missed us, right? And that's, they didn't do the homework. So we found that basically a lot of our, you know, our American partners, so our Munich Re partnerships champion out of the US. And I think in August alone, we're not raising capital right now, but I've had about 30 different meetings with international VCs in August alone. And I carry those relationships forward to the fall in expectations. It's about, hey, we have lots of runway. We're managers and custodians of our capital. We can basically use the whole calendar year of 2021 to growing, because what's happened is that consumer behavior and the paradigm shift of acquiring these different financial instruments online is accelerated so fast and in so meaningful way. And I'll get you a couple examples here. So during the pandemic, we basically, you know, we our original target market is obviously, you know, millennials and Gen Zs and, you know, where people are purchasing and speaking to their different communities online as far as e-commerce retail. Well, now it's everybody, because there's not a generation that hasn't been comfortable ordering their groceries online and picking them up from a Walmart parking lot. And what we've seen now is that it's not just about the small business market. We're seeing across our platform mid-market opportunities every week that would normally be anchored into a legacy broker high-touch relationship. And now they're looking for an omni experience with more empowerment, with value and price. And now we're seeing basically even programs. We had a program a few weeks ago that was 90 commercial units. Not our appetite, but it was just behavior. The behavior of that was super interesting. Here's a multi-million dollar program coming across our platform from an older gentleman that had been anchored into a 50-year-old broker relationship. He's been in business in 1948 or something like that.
Holy smokes.
That's the paradigm shift that's happened so quick. And so you're trying to build the infrastructure to get it in place in anticipation for what's to come in that consumer behavior. At the end of the day, we're an e-commerce retailer. So in our B2C marketplace and then our B2B integrations and opening up our APIs to these broader network, you know, customers or affiliates, like that's what's happening really quickly. And when we are launching in the US, we're not even going to basically step off a plane to operationalize that infrastructure. That's what makes us proud, that this is scalable. These businesses are, we're going to be launching in 3 to 5 states in the first half of next year without even touching down. That should scare these incumbents a lot, right?
Yeah. That's pretty amazing. And congratulations to you guys. I think a lot of people can learn from your story, because I know a lot of businesses are trying to get into the United States, but you know, there's still a lot of hurdles, and every state is for themselves. It's like going in, the United States is 52 states, it's really 52 countries.
Yep.
with one border, minus like Hawaii and Puerto Rico. But congratulations on that. I want to
We're in a very heavily regulated marketplace and industry. So from underwriting and licensing and distribution, so it's the compliance and the regulatory and the reporting audit requirements, very difficult to do that. So, you know, we've been hard at work the last couple of years to make it come to fruition. And, you know, you're trying to get other Canadian stakeholders to, you know, get below the scratch below the surface, figure out what's going on in the value chain, and then go sponsor and endorse those teams that are really innovating, yet to be seen.
And I know we have mutual friends with the guys from Real Matters, the Smith brothers.
Yeah.
You know, your story is like reminding me of when they first started out with Solidify and Real Matters. Will you be looking to open some offices? Because I know that when Real Matters opened up an office in Buffalo, which took a lot of people by surprise within the area, because as a Buffalo Bills fan, I ended up meeting some of these people from Solidify, and the fact that they didn't even know that they were actually a Canadian company kind of surprised me. So I guess looking into the future, like, will you guys be opening up some, you know, development shops in the United States? Or I know like a lot can happen in the next 3 to 5 years, but is that something you guys are looking into?
Yeah, 100%. We'll open up an anchor business in the U.S. to represent your interest there. The one beauty in, you know, being, you know, proud Toronto, you know, Canadian-based company, especially in insurance, and you look at what our, you know, target markets are, we happen to be in a peninsula that's surrounded by prolific Great Lakes corridor of states, right? So it's, you know, these are big markets. Each one of those states, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, their small business definition of size of market, each one of those states is larger than all the small business market in Canada. So it's a very large opportunity. And it's right in our front yard. So risk management product, it really aligns as in symbiotic across both markets, Canada and US. We actually have more understanding and appreciation of that product in Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, et cetera, than in some cases, Western Canada, where we're far removed. So we don't have an office in Western Canada. We've been distributing there for the past year. Continue to represent your interest here in Toronto, but we will have basically our underwriting technology business located in one of those anchor states to, you know, represent your interest, whether it's Illinois or Ohio.
Nice. All right. I know you're busy and won't take much of your time. You've been talking all day. I guess I'll just finish off with this. You know, what can we learn from FoxQuilt? Like, what's the biggest thing people can take away from your journey, the company's journey, where you guys are going? Like, what is your words of wisdom? Like, what does Mark tell us? Like, what can you tell us? What can we really learn from you guys?
Well, it starts and ends with people. So whether it's our, you know, our technology team, our product team, ops, distribution, or market team, we've been very blessed to attract top talent. In Canada, Americans figure this out now. Between, you know, Ontario specific, because that's our home and that's what we know, between Waterloo and Toronto, we have a rich ecosystem that's filled with really strong capabilities and people. And then it becomes, you know, when you're acquiring talent, then it's basically you turn the tap on and it's all of a sudden you get a quicker flow, because now you're attracting, you know, experienced Canadians that can help finance your vision. And what I say is that you've got to start attracting that talent that's, you know, basically going to be a champion your business model very early. Just like you're raising capital, everything's we started every day, not in a reactionary state. And you have to be, you can't wait for anything to come to you. You've got to go get it. So very, very American based, but you've got to be ambitious and bullish. And you've got to basically have, you know, we're not interested in building a $100 million insurance company. Neither Munich Re wanting us. They want to build $1 billion insurance carriers. And that's where we're just global, bigger markets. And that's why we left our borders very early. So we're going after those different, that talent or those different stakeholders that actually understand and align to our common vision and purpose really early and it never stops. And we're not going to wait the knock on the door to make things happen. And so we've had lots of different hiccups and roadblocks along the way. And in Canada, if you're starting them out, these technology companies out in Toronto, Canada, you're already, there's roadblocks in place because there's delays and there's harder access to capital, et cetera. But you can't let that basically be an impediment to what your common purpose is and vision is at the end of the day. You go, if you believe in it and you've got a team of other leaders around that are on the same page that believe in the business model, just keep going, make it happen. Don't let a VC that hasn't done their homework tell you differently. Don't let basically other stakeholders within your value chain that's going to critique and negatively critique your business. If you know every basically if you're in your gut intuitively, and then you've got 3 years of basically alphas and betas, and then all the experimentation that tells you that it's your product's resonating with customers, then of course you've got that measurement of success. Then you got to go all in. And we afforded ourselves a couple years to basically, have that measured science to really figure it out. And then, we've been, blessed that we've had really strong leaders navigate our interests through this new virtual world. But ironically, it's catapulted our growth, 300% or more year over year. It's basically less marketing expenditure than the year prior.
Yeah. So
we're had some good luck and fortune too.
Awesome, Mark. I really appreciate your time. Congratulations once again. I guess on a side note, we at TechConnex are very excited to partner up with you guys on October 1st for the Entrepreneur Summit, 5 Ways to Stretch a Lean Budget. We're really looking forward to working with you guys, and we're pretty excited to see some of these speakers and TechConnex members as well, like Ann Filoma of Schooley Mitchell, Tara Bedford of Ruby. I went to school with Andrew Kinnear of Yellowfruit. So really excited to work with you guys on this summit, and thank you to Roshni and the marketing team for bringing us on board. I guess with that, we're done, and I want to thank you and wish you guys all the best, and hopefully we'll talk soon again.
Yeah, thanks again for having us, and looking forward to this moment as well. It'll be fun.
Awesome, Mark. Have a great day.
You too.
All right, see ya. We'll be right back.